number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? Zay will let us know. At 1:30, we select winners in our Supreme Lending Picks. Looks like somebody's picking up the slack for the others making these selections. This show. And in mere minutes, it's our weekly chat with the great Paul Wadlington of Inside Texas on 3 and EGAT. I'm Trey Elling. Isaiah Collier is behind the glass, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Getting ready for another 11 a.m. kick. Make sure you get your rest, or just don't sleep. 7 a.m. we'll crank up the pregame from Bevo Boulevard. Bucky and I will be over there right around gate 2. Aaron and Rod will be over there at the legendary Texas Tail Garden. If you haven't been to 17th and San Jacinto, well, welcome to town. Get over there and then come see us on Bevo Boulevard. Hopefully that energy that we've seen around the stadium will translate into that 11 o'clock kick for Texas and Oklahoma State. Going to need that energy early because Oklahoma State wants to make this a physical affair very fast. We'll see if Texas is ready for them. All right, we're always ready for this guy on the Vaquero's Cafe and Cantina hotline. We do it every Thursday about this time. He is Paul Wadlington. He is also Scipio Tex of Inside Texas on 3.com. Check out the EGAT podcast with our man Kevin Dunn. And Trey, we are also sponsored.
That is correct. Our Talking Texas Football with Paul each Thursday at 1 is sponsored by the Wadlington and Winslow Mortgage Team. You can find out more by waiting until the end of the conversation. You can also go to mortgagesbygabe.com. Paul, welcome as always. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. How about you, fellas?
Doing all right, considering the end result last Saturday. What were your initial impressions of the Longhorns' loss to Oklahoma last Saturday?
I enjoyed the first quarter immensely. I enjoyed the first half quite a bit. I enjoyed about midway through the third quarter quite a lot. And then I turned off the TV. Did we lose?
Whoa.
Hung on to win.
We did.
Oklahoma
yes.
went for two at the end, and they didn't get it, and Texas won the game.
Don't torture them.
And
man.
I'm assuming Alabama blew out A&M, as everyone expected.
Oh, it was like a 7-touchdown win for the Crimson
oh,
Tide.
38-3, I think, was the final of that one, yes. So, Paul, was there... It's weird. I've heard a lot of Longhorn fans reacting to the game about a moment. Maybe it's the moment you knew there was trouble, or the moment you knew, oh, my God. We could lose this thing. Oh, my God, it's going to turn all the way around. Obviously, that level of confidence at 28-7 was one thing. What was the moment for you where you realized, oh, wait a second, this not only could get interesting, this is headed into a bad spot?
When Oklahoma started running counter plays at about 15 to 20 yards a pop, I thought, yeah, that's irregular that a team down 18 in the middle of the third quarter is running the ball. And also, you know, basically still playing a balanced offense. But this signals trouble. Also, frankly, benching Spencer Rattler, that was clearly a turning point because he was going to be the limiter, the governor on that offense because of his propensity for, you know, foolish turnovers. And once they got that addressed with a freshman, no less, the Texas defense was in trouble. So, yeah, unable to stop the run and then, you know, Caleb Williams, to his credit, hit some pretty incredible throws, and the OU receivers, to their credit, made some pretty incredible catches. And then you just had some stuff that always seems to be a part of this game where you had some calls go against Texas, and, you know, and that I think that I don't think that was determinative in the outcome, but I think it sort of added to the frustration that was certainly mounting as the viewer and probably on the Texas sideline. But yeah, I mean, it was well within Texas's grasp to win that game, and they just couldn't do it.
The rush defense for the Longhorns is most concerning just because of what remains on Texas' schedule. Well, I guess the offensive line is a bit of a concern too, especially this weekend versus Oklahoma State, but we will get to that. It's concerning about the defense because the defensive line has not done his job, and I realize this is becoming a bit of a broken record subject, but you and Kevin were the first two people that I heard talking about some red flags with this defensive line going back to that Louisiana game. And unfortunately, we're still seeing a lot of the same bad habits popping up. I know I'm going to ask you this question once again, maybe the third straight week. Is there an obvious solution to you of what these guys can be doing differently or what Kwiatkowski can be doing differently to stop the hemorrhaging of rushing yards?
Well, I don't think it's simplistic. I think it's probably multifactorial, and it's more than just the defensive line, I should say. Look, if you have multiple instances where Jaron Thompson, B.J. Foster, Brendan School, or Luke Brockermeyer, DeMarvian Overshown have a one-on-one unblocked matchup in the hole with an OU ball carrier, you have to make the tackle. And, you know, that has to be a 3-yard gain instead of a 30-yard gain or a 60-yard gain. And, you know, that's the fundamental of defense. One of the great things about defense is the positions kind of tell you what they do. When you play safety, you are quite literally the safety on the defense. Your job is to limit big plays, whether in the running game or the passing game. And when you're a linebacker, your job is to back the line. And there's been some deficiencies there. That said, the defensive line has not lived up to its hype. I do think some of that is probably developmental. I do think some of it could be just individual player issues. I do think Pete Kwiatkowski needs to think about the team that he actually has rather than the team he wants to sort of play. And I would say if you're not giving, if you think this defensive line does have some penetrating ability and some ability to disrupt, particularly guys like Sweat, Ajomo, Collins, maybe that needs to be the group you play together. And maybe they need to be lined up in a gap and attacking upfield rather than playing straight up and catching.
Paul, in term, we've talked with you about kind of the rushing side of it for Texas, what style of running might be better for them. On this defensive front, you mentioned this counter play. Is there a simple way to explain to like non-football nerds what is so bad about that matchup for like what was so bad about it to where, like you said, third and fourth quarter, just the basic, a basic looking run is getting chunk after chunk after chunk. Is this Texas defense not set up for that in some way?
Well, so it's football talk is to talk about run fits, right? And I think people that talk about run fits half the time don't really know what they're talking about. I think they're just using the terminology, right, to explain stopping the running game. But counter gaps or counter tray, it is a famous old play really popularized by the Washington Redskins of the 80s under Joe Gibbs, the Hogs. And it's where you pull both the backside guard and tackle or a backside tight end and a guard or a backside tight end and a tackle. And they basically come parallel down the line of scrimmage and you leave the play side defenders or the outside play defender on the defense unblocked. And your job is to get a kick out. And then the second blocker is going to turn up field and knock out the first enemy jersey he encounters. And your back needs to be able to key off of that and make a good read. What OU adds to the mix, because Lincoln Riley is really a passing offense genius and a total offense genius, is they put a constraint, an RPO constraint on the backside. So what it does is it kind of freezes your backside players to not go help, because they're worried that the quarterback, if he does a good job with ball handling, that he might still have the ball and he's going to throw it. So all that said, the way you stop it is either penetration at the line of scrimmage. Your nose tackle or the guy who's lined up at two technique needs to get penetration, because if he does that, those two pulling linemen end up in a big pileup and the whole play goes to heck. The other thing you need to do is on the play side, the outside defender who's unblocked, he needs to play that correctly. And unfortunately, early in the game, Jacoby Jones went out, 265-pound Jacoby Jones, and he was replaced for the predominance of his snaps by 230-ish-pound former walk-on Jett Bush. And so I think there was a little bit of a physics equation going on there. On top of that, the Texas linebackers and the Texas secondary personnel, particularly at safety, did not do a good job of fitting that run. So while there were instances where OU blocked it right and it didn't get stopped early, that still shouldn't result in a 40-yard untouched touchdown, right? Or an 18-yard untouched touchdown or a 65-yard run from Kennedy Brooks. What those should result in is 6, 7, 8-yard gains if your safety is frankly doing their job. Mm.
Were you surprised to see Andre Carrick struggle to the degree that he's no longer in the starting lineup this week? And what do you make of the changes made along the offensive line prior to Oklahoma State?
No, I'm not surprised. I think one of the things about that game is that Alex Grinch, particularly in the second half, started attacking our protections and not just our individual players. And what I mean that by that is Grinch was doing things specifically to attack how he knows we block and defend certain protections. And so some of those cleaner pockets that Casey Thompson got in the first half, that allowed him to connect deep to wide open Texas receivers. Those fell apart pretty quickly because a lot of the movement and the particular types of stunts that they were doing with Perry and Winfrey, with Isaiah Thomas, and then of course Nick Bonito and the OU linebackers. So I'm not surprised Carrick struggled some as a pass blocker, because I think they created some indecision in his mind about what his responsibility was. Did he have someone inside of him? Did he have someone outside of him? And as an offensive lineman, if you're a little bit uncertain, you end up often blocking no one. And so you've seen that happen with both Andre Carrick and Christian Jones this year. So I think the move for Kerstetter is just seeking stability. Kerstetter always knows what to do. That's his best attribute. He's very reliable. And then I think Carrick, I think he's still going to get worked in because he's a plus in run blocking, and he's probably the most aggressive lineman on the offensive line. And so I think, you know, it's a series of trade-offs. He was also very good blocking outside zone against OU. The interesting thing will be playing Tope Amade at right guard. It's going to be very, very, very interesting to see what he can do.
Talking with Paul Wadlington again, InsideTexas.com, On3.com, and if you haven't caught the EGAT podcast for the week, grab it wherever you get your podcast. He and Kevin Dunn bring you the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast each week. Paul, staying on the offensive side, off of this Whittington injury, talk about the wide receivers as they will be laid out. Give me your thought on Marcus Washington getting the start, and then where you think Texas could attack with those guys against Oklahoma State.
That's a great question. I think it's going to be relevant to the game because Oklahoma State loves to bring their linebackers, Malcolm Rodriguez, Devin Harper. They have a combined 14 quarterback hits this year. That tells you that they like to bring those guys inside, and that's something that's been a problem for Texas. In addition, Oklahoma State, one of the strengths of their defense is its safety, particularly Kobe Harvell Peel. He's a big safety. They like to bring him up. He's very aggressive in run defense. And so what you're going to end up with is if they're stunning those linebackers, you're going to have some RPO opportunities to your big receivers dragging over the middle. And we've seen repeatedly Jordan Whittington be really good at that. And he's very good at yak, right? Yards after the catch. So he catches these little 8-10 yard drag routes and ends up turning them into big plays. That's what we need from Marcus Washington on Saturday. He can't just catch that RPO. Certainly we want him to catch it for the 8 yard gain in that vacated space. But we need him to turn up and make someone miss and make a play and turn some of those plays into 30-yard gains, because that will really punish the Oklahoma State defense and take away one of their key strengths. If Oklahoma State has to sort of play straight-up defense and they can't use their quickness on the back end, they're pretty ordinary. And actually, Sarkisian then will have an opportunity to isolate their cornerbacks, because their cornerbacks really lost an important player last year in Roe Williams. He was a really good corner for them, and they have not replaced him with a like-kind replacement. So they really run their defense to sort of protect those corners, just the way Alex Grinch was running his defense to protect his corners. And you saw Texas and Steve Sarkisian able to expose them by getting them repeatedly isolated in space. That's going to be the Texas game plan. And one of the ways that you can do that is by really punishing that RPO game in the middle of the field, and thus making Oklahoma State keep bodies in the middle of the field and not help out those corners.
Is it worth exploring Keelan Robinson at maybe a slot receiver position a little bit more, just considering the speed that he possesses?
You know, it is in sort of theory, but I think the reality of slot receiver is you have to make really quick decisions very quickly reading coverages, and it's not super easy. It's not super intuitive. And you need plus hands. So there's running back good hands, which means you can catch like a little swing pass, which, you know, pretty good weekend warriors can do that, right? there's a difference between that and like being a no BS slot receiver who's making processing a lot of stuff and making hard catches on a line or having to adjust his body or adjust his routes. So I understand the appeal of that to people. I don't think it works that easily. You know, guys like Marshall Faulk, guys like even Bijan Robinson, they're really rare and special for a reason. You know, there's not many running backs that can really credibly split out and do real wide receiver type stuff.
What stands out to you about the Oklahoma State offense?
You know, I think they've done a good job covering up a lot of deficiencies, to be honest. You know, they've been really beset by injuries. They've been cursed. And their offensive line is not super talented other than Josh Sills, who is the huge guard former West Virginia transfer who's been awesome for Oklahoma State in the running game. He's every bit of 6'6", 350, and takes his helmet off, and he's pretty terrifying as well. he's got an interesting haircut going, he's a stud. But other than that, the offensive line's pretty ordinary. They've had several running back injuries, and they've relied on Jaylen Warren. Warren has carried the ball 95 times over the last three games. He's averaging over 32 yards a carry. Now, humanitarian Gary Patterson is very concerned about that sort of workload. He's going to file an injunction in a Stillwater court to have that halted, and we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I think Gundy's actually done a good job considering the constraints that he's had, and OSU's had to really play sort of grinded-out football. But I think the simple solution of, well, let's play an eight-man box and stop the run and shut him down, well, the fact is the Oklahoma State wide receivers have gotten healthy. They're back. And Spencer Sanders has actually been playing better. They're still protecting him a little bit, but he threw for 340 plus against Kansas State and actually looked pretty good throwing down the field. So I think Texas needs to stop the run by playing the run properly, and then they just need to prevent Oklahoma State from throwing the ball over their heads. And if they can do that, I think they can play good enough defense. I guess that's the goal now, good enough defense.
<Yeah. laughs>
And then hope that Sarkisian and the offense can put up a bunch of points on the board and pull it away late.
Paul, what do you make of Alfred Collins out there at the D end?
He's improving, and I understand the need to put him there because they want some more size, some more physicality there. He's a mystery to me because he is very athletically gifted. That's obvious. He needs more strength. That was obvious last year, right? He's just relying on his athleticism out there. He's really like a big basketball player who's playing defensive line. And he needed more technique. And it doesn't seem like the strength and technique got addressed in the offseason or in the spring or in the early fall camp. And I'm curious as to why. And, it's not attitudinal. Alfred Collins is like a good guy and a hard worker. So, you know, I think there's some things, some questions around that need to be addressed. But if they can get the light to come on midseason, that is very much welcomed because Texas needs some impact players on the defensive line.
All right, Paul, before we let you go, my thought on this game is, it's weird to say, but that Gundy wants it in the 20s, Sark needs it to be in the 30s or higher. Would you agree? And what do you think happens?
I think that's right. And I think, ultimately, I think I like Texas in this game. I know Oklahoma State's undefeated. I know they're coming off a bye week. There are a lot of indicators that, you know, if you're traditional Vegas analyst, you love Oklahoma State, right? They've got extra preparation time, and they're undefeated. They've gotten healthier, right? But I don't know that they've played top-flight competition. And frankly, they are pretty fortunate to beat Boise State. If any of you watch that game, they caught a lot of breaks to edge out that opponent. And I'm not quite sure they're as good as their record or their ranking might indicate. And I think Texas has a good chance at home. What Texas really needs is to see Dallas deep ball Casey Thompson and not Fort Worth deep ball Casey Thompson, because Sark is going to scheme up those open shots. We see them in every game. And if Texas hits them, boy, Texas gets a lot harder to defend.
Yeah, no doubt.
The deep ball looked so much better last weekend. That is definitely a silver lining of that loss.
No doubt. That is
He was throwing beautiful balls in Dallas.
No doubt. And
that was exciting to see.
Yep. Paul Wadlington, Scipio Tex himself. Check out Inside Texas on 3.com and the EGAT podcast. Plus, Trey's going to let you know a little bit more about something else Paul's got going on that can help all of you out. Paul, we always appreciate it, man. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you next week.
My pleasure. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Paul.
That is Paul Wadlington. Tell him about it, Trey.
Our weekly Talking Texas Football Chat with Paul is brought to you by the Wadlington and Winslow Mortgage Team. Are you looking for a dream home or want to refinance your current home? There is nobody better to help you benefit from this unprecedented low interest rate environment than the Wadlington and Winslow Mortgage Team. It's certainly better than if you go through a bank, because that bank is the lender. So the interest rate that they offer, that's what you get. Plus, you have to pay all sorts of extra fees that help boost up that lobby of theirs, the MC Escher posters, the koi ponds, all the other stuff. But Paul and Gabe, they don't have MC Escher posters. They don't have koi ponds. What they do have is access to the entire lending market. That's hundreds of lenders to choose from to help you find that perfect deal. How do they help? How do they know what the perfect deal is for you? Well, they get to go know every single one of their clients. They learn all about you, your family, your mortgage and financial situations, as well as your goals for each. From there, they help you find that ideal rate. And you can always get a hold of them, unlike at the bank that's only there Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Plus, Gabe and Paul are Texas exes, and Gabe is a real estate attorney with decades in the business. That's why the Wadlington and Winslow mortgage team has a 98.9% closing success rate. And they're going to close you on time because Paul and Gabe are men of their word. Get in touch with them by giving them a call at 832-557-1095. That's 832-557-1095. Or reach out at mortgagesbygabe.com. That's mortgagesbygabe.com. The Wadlington and Winslow mortgage team.
Gabe Winslow, mortgage broker, NMLS number 1613381. C2 Financial, NMLS number 135622.
All right, coming up, we're going to make our supreme picks. These first two games, I swear we're being punked, and then it gets a little bit tougher. Isaiah Collier producing for us, more from his chilling out driving playlist coming up. And then at 145, even more from Isaiah, because we got to find out where we're at in society. Stay with us on the Horn.
Shirts and skins.
You and me. We used to be together.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Every day together.
Oh. Always.
Now this feels a bit Freudian here, like he's asking the missus to say less so he can just drive and enjoy the music.
I think he might just be working his way through the voice judges. Maybe that's what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had Adam Levine earlier, and now he's going with a little Gwen. No doubt. Don't speak. It's on Isaiah's Chilling in the Car playlist. I just could work in a car. I see it. You just like drive. Look at him. Look at him grooving in there.
Boost
oh,
it.
Oh, crank it up. Come on. Yeah. All right. Do you remember the first time you saw her fronting this band?
Oh.
It's like when you realized there was a level of like musical hotness you didn't even know you needed. You didn't even know it existed. And you saw her in like the sports bra and those baggy pants all rolled up or whatever it was, and she's at the front of the stage, and I'm like, oh my God, that's fantastic.
Yeah, she was the prototypical Cali skater slash punk chick.
Exactly. She looked like that if the skateboard rolled over to her, she would not just give it back. She would give you a couple tricks and then give it back.
She's one of those people in that era, too, that just faced ridiculous rumors. Like, Troy Aikman is one that I've brought up before, where for whatever reason, throughout Dallas in the mid-90s, there were these whispers that Troy Aikman was really gay. It's like,
right.
What are you talking about? He's dating Lori Morgan right now. Is this how desperate we are to spread rumors that we're calling Troy Aikman gay? For her, it was the Jamie Lee Curtis deal. Oh, did you know that she actually was born a boy?
I didn't know that.
What are you talking about, born a boy? Well, you see the Adam's apple, don't you? No, I don't see a freaking Adam's apple. I'm sorry, I don't.
I'll tell you what, she also has, you talk about somebody who's ended up dating handsome people. Good, or married to.
Yeah, she dated the guy from Bush.
What's his name? Gavin Rosdale or
That's
whatever.
It.
They had kids, too. Talk about the genetic lottery.
Mm-hmm.
Holy mackerel.
Who's she with now?
Blake Shelton. And as much as I don't think much of him musically, that's a handsome dude.
He's not on your road trip playlist, is he?
No, I can't stand Blake Shelton just because he's with Gwen Stefani.
That's a good reason. There's another reason, too. It's
Love it.
Listening to the music. That's another reason you wouldn't put it on your list. Trust me.
It's bad?
Yeah.
Like Toby Keith bad?
No. It's not that bad. It's not that
Rich bad.
No, it's not that bad. No.
Okay.
It's better than that, but not good enough for me to own. I don't need to own any of his music.
He's country, right?
He is country. I've never heard one track that makes me think, I want to own that song. Not one time.
Like new school Alan Jackson?
Alan Jackson is Merle Haggard compared to him. Did I say that out loud?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, Alan Jackson is hardcore country compared to Blake Shelton.
All right.
It's just me. He is, you just want to have a little fun, bubblegum country. That's who he is to me.
Like Kid Rock country?
I don't know. You might.
I don't know why I'm so dead set on finding the accurate comparison.
You might be ripping Kid Rock there. All right.
Oh.
So, more from Isaiah's playlist. Let me add this in. We had Dire Straits, we had Maroon 5, and now we have No Doubt. We're getting a picture.
Just put Gwen Stefani. Who cares about the other guys?
Oh, come on. No, I'm going to be, I'm a music snob. I've got to name the band. But you are, so this is Isaiah just out for a drive. These are the things he's listening to. I like it so far. All right, what else I like is the fact that our picks were coming together these last couple weeks. The Supreme Picks, brought to you by Supreme Lending and Chris Waters Realty.
It's the Isaiah factor.
The Isaiah factor has really helped us. Isaiah seems to have cleared either our minds or we're just getting out of his way. But last week we were 4-1. And gentlemen, if that kid in Cincinnati had just hit a kick, what'd he miss? Five of them? Just hit one of those, dude. And we'd have been 5-0. Because you, Isaiah, I thought accurately by the end of that game, had picked Cincinnati to win. You lean that way. We agreed with you, and we almost got it done.
And to my credit, the influence there, because I think he picked Cincy first, was me just saying, bleep it, let's go Bengals.
You did. And I would have gone Green Bay, so thank you for trying that, but it almost worked. Every kicker missed. Crosby finally hit one. All right, so this week, guys, I am certain we're being punked to start this list because the person that sends us the picks has changed, even though supposedly the source has not changed. But it starts with Florida at LSU.
I don't know what I'm missing here, Florida.
I feel like I'm being punked. Florida as well. Isaiah.
Man, yeah, Florida, I guess. I mean, I know Ed's coaching for his life and all, but...
Right? It is in Baton Rouge, but do we really want to be that? You really want to go off that?
They just lost to Auburn in Baton Rouge.
I know. We got to go Florida.
Bo Nix look like a world beater on the road.
Got to go Florida.
Yes, yeah. Florida.
Here's the other one. A&M at Missouri.
A&M.
We don't want to be the good.
I'm not overthinking that one. A&M is favored by, I want to say, close to double digits.
It's 9. Yeah. Look, I'm not saying this as a grad or fan. I'm just saying this as a reasonable human. You don't want to pick Missouri.
You don't take the team that is a two-possession, a multi-possession dog.
At home.
That's at Missouri.
It is at Missouri. It is at Missouri. And A&M will not be paying attention. They'll be down from the game. But is it enough to lose the game? This is winners here.
No, they're going to hit a bit of a stride here. Yeah. A&M wins that one probably by like 14 points.
The Aggies should control that game. Now we get to the three games I think that are tough to figure out. All right, let's go. Lemonade and Dr. Pepper, BYU Baylor in Waco. Straight up winner. Vegas says Baylor's about a touchdown favorite, and as much as I hate to do it, I don't like either one of these teams. I hope it's a tie and the power fails, but I'm kind of leaning Baylor here. Isaiah?
Sick him.
He's wearing bright yellow today, too. Maybe that's part of it.
In a different pick 'em deal altogether, I went with the Bears here, so let's stick with that.
All right, yeah, I agree. Getting them in Waco, too. It's going to be a hell of an environment.
In Waco, and even though BYU is the ranked team, Baylor is the favorite team.
I think Baylor is going to be ranked after this weekend. Baylor's going to beat them.
I can see that.
And maybe even flip that, take the spot from them, take the 19 or wherever you want to put them. All right, guys, the two pro games are really good ones, the best games of the week probably. First off, Chargers at Baltimore. That performance from Lamar Jackson, as good as they looked, they are at home. Chargers looking good. That defense with Bosa trying to get after Lamar Jackson. If you don't want to watch this game, you clearly hate the NFL. Please watch Lifetime at noon on Sunday or go to TBS and watch a Star Wars marathon because you hate football if you don't want to watch this game. Isaiah, do you have a gut on this?
Oh, man, I like what Justin Herbert's doing right now. I'm going to go with Los Angeles.
You like the Chargers.
Chad?
See, I was leaning Baltimore.
Okay.
I was leaning a little Baltimore. They're still banged up in ways. Are they asking Lamar to do too much in the running game? That's my big question. But he was so freaky good. He accounted for 500 on a Monday night, and it's like messing with my brain. It's messing with me, but that Chargers defense is badass.
They are, but they were a bit of a sieve versus Cleveland last weekend, too. Mm. And that's what's a bit concerning for me right now. Ultimately, though, I think my status in the Justin Herbert fan club is what is ultimately going to sway me to pick Los Angeles.
You're going Chargers? All right. We'll go Chargers on that pick. And the final game, gentlemen, is Arizona trying to stay undefeated at Cleveland. Is this the week that somebody figures out Arizona on the road? Baker and the Browns have been pretty good. Now, Isaiah, you had the gut last week on one of their division mates. You like the Cincinnati thing. You have a feeling here on Cleveland?
Yeah, I hate these Oklahoma quarterbacks going at it because they're both playing pretty well right now.
Yeah, that's true. Kyler and Baker.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Kyler, though.
You're going Kyler?
Yeah.
Arizona on the road.
Going since Cleveland.
You're going Cleveland.
So it's up to you.
Oh, my God. I have to figure out.
I only picked Cleveland, so he would have to make the call.
Come on, man. We can't go with four road teams and one home team, can we?
Depends. Some of the weeks work out like that.
I know. Some of it does. Some of it happens. I can't remember what we did last week. Cleveland. We're going to go Cleveland.
Okay.
Last week, we picked the Bills by default because we picked all home teams.
That's true. And it worked, too. Maybe this one will work. Yeah, right. Baker and Kyler. To me, the answer to what would have happened if Johnny Manziel had worked out better as a pro, these two guys are the answer. Kyler's part of the answer. Baker's part of the answer. What if Johnny Manziel had worked at it, developed, learned how to throw NFL passes when NFL passes were required? These two guys to me, and one of them haunts me to this day because he was my guy, now he's not my guy. And then the other one is just kind of that evolved version of, you know, you can be crazy and freaky, but you have to do certain things. These two guys have proven you can do it.
Yeah, he's almost like a hybrid between the two,
yeah,
Johnny Manziel, at his best anyhow,
yeah,
when he was playing quarterback.
Be on the shorter side. You don't have to be 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", but you got to learn certain things, and Johnny wasn't willing to learn any of them.
What was he, like 5'11", 6 feet?
Johnny was, yeah.
Okay.
And what's Kyler, 5'10"? 5'10", 5'11",
no,
maybe?
Remember when they did the stretching deal?
5'9"-ish.
To get him to like 5'10", but he's right, probably somewhere closer to 5'8", or 5'7".
So I'm taller than Kyler Murray, is what we're saying. I'm 5'10".
If you're a true 5'10", then yes, you're taller than Kyler Murray, unless he's done the bone stretching deal.
All right, so there you go. Thanks to Supreme Lending and Chris Waters Realty for helping us on the picks. It's one of those two teams, I think, that's out in front. We're your, I think, third place right now, but trying to make a move. And thanks to Isaiah for trying to help us pick better because we started the season 0-5. Man, those two games are good. Chargers and Ravens, the Browns and Arizona game is great. You got the Cowboys going to New England this week. That is an interesting game. Tonight, by the way, is Tampa at Philadelphia. A little Fox NFL Network action for you. And if you like an exciting, up-and-down-the-field, dynamic football game, I'd watch something that's recorded. No Gronk, no Lavonte David, no Antoine Winfield Jr. for the Bucs tonight, and they're playing the Eagles. I think that's going to be an ugly game tonight.
God, they lost Winfield in that secondary, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I think 20 may win the game, and I think it's going to be an ugly version of all of it. The Bucs are kind of clunky anyway, but Trey, when they don't have Gronk on the field, that is a different football team. It is a weird change how much he makes them looks. He just makes them look more dynamic. It's weird.
Yeah, Cameron Brate doesn't even come close to comparing to what Gronkowski provides that offense.
Yeah, Antonio Brown helps him a little. For some reason, that relationship between Brown and Brady, it's real. You can see it. They have a feel for each other when they're out there. When both of those guys are off, Gronk and Brown, the Bucs pass game gets really strange.
Yep.
You watch them thinking, oh, wait, Mike Evans is out there, right? Chris Godwin's pretty good, and then it bogs down fast because their run game is really confusing. So Tampa and Philly is the game tonight. There are your Supreme picks. Coming up at 2, we will talk a little movie magic because Hard Luck Love Song is finally getting a major release in theaters. Trey's going to be a part of a Q&A with the director and a producer and one of the actors from the movie. We're going to talk to the director and producer coming up. They are a couple, Justin Corsby, the director, and Allison Smith, his wife, and one of the producers of the movie. We will tell you about how you can go see it with Trey coming up tomorrow night and check out that Q&A. Up next, though, Isaiah Collier and where we at in society. Hope you're having a good Thursday. This is The Horn.
Bucky and Aaron.
You people being the reason that Lily from the AT&T commercial says we have lost the break.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
I could drive to that, right? I could drive to that.
This is all mine.
This
already
is on your list?
Yeah, it's already on my list. I love this song.
It's fantastic. So this is it just called Good Day?
Today was a good day.
Today was a good day.
All right, it was a good day. Yeah.
From, let's see if I can make this as white as possible. This is Mr. Cube. Is that correct? Mr. Cube? This is the...
I love the evolution of his life as an entertainer.
Ice Cube.
He's still getting it done as a musician, but he's got his toe in so many different things now, including Big Three.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, acting. He's become like this family-friendly actor who can still switch modes and go into the more devious R-rated roles at times, too.
The best compliment I can give him for versatility is he's in movies I would never dream of seeing because they're too lame, not because they're too dirty. I'll see any dirty thing he does. Mm-hmm. But you put him in like an overly written, obvious comedy, and I'm running the other way. So that's the big compliment I'll give him. Is like, dude, tons of people are going to come see you do that, and they're going to love it, they're going to laugh, and you're going to make tons of money. I won't be there, but good for you, man.
What was the road trip comedy? Are We There Yet?
There it is.
Good grief.
I would yeah. never see that movie. I would never sit through that.
He's one of those guys that has that Johnny Cash appeal, though. He's somebody that's really yeah. hard to dislike. Even the stuff that you're not a fan of necessarily, you still respect his process.
And that right there is his first solo record, correct?
No, not necessarily. That was probably the one that really popped off where everybody's like, okay.
I remember that video.
He's really here.
This was the first one that maybe established him as a solo artist?
Yeah, because he went
NWA?
Yeah, he went solo right after NWA and then dissed the whole group
yeah.
with No Vaseline, which is one of the greatest diss tracks of all time. But yeah, he's had more solo joints.
Yes, indeed. Now, that song right there, that beat, at that time, were he and Dre getting along? Would that be a Dre beat or is that
Ice
Cube?
I don't know who made this beat, but it came from an Isley Brothers song.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
Yeah, I played it on B&E the other day.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
such a good hook. It's such a good hook, man. That's a great song. All right, so Isaiah's given us his driving list today. It has included Dire Straits. It's now got Ice Cube in there, along with Maroon 5 and No Doubt. There's a lot of good mix going on there. A lot of good variety. Somebody is liking something on Isaiah's list. A lot of people in that car with you, Isaiah. There's a lot of people in that car ready to go wherever you're going. All right, speaking of Isaiah, he's going to take us through a little where we at real quick. Coming up after that, we've got two special guests. They are in the house, Justin Corsby and Allison Smith. They are the director and producer, respectively. They're also a couple, but that's neither here nor there. We'll ask them about how they fight about movies. But they made an incredible movie called Hard Luck Love Song. I've now seen it twice. Trey's going to have seen it like five times by the time he sees it tomorrow night again. But it's finally getting a major release. It was technically released last year, but, you know, pandemic and stuff. Now it's getting its major release, and you can check it out at Regal Arbor at Great Hills tomorrow evening. And Trey's going to do a Q&A with one of the actors and Justin and Allison. So we're going to talk to Justin and Allison coming up at 2.
And that will include an audience Q&A after I have a chance to ask about 10 minutes worth of questions,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you're darn right. All right, right now, let's go Where We At in Society with Isaiah. Here we go.
Where are we at in society today?
Yes, indeed. All right. Where are we at in society? Brought to you by Ice Cube. What do you got? What do you got, Isaiah?
Not just Ice Cube, all Ice Cubes.
All Ice Cubes. That's
yes.
true. Whatever
Which
your
includes
shape,
the artist and then also the frozen water.
Regular kind, the crescents, the craft ones, those really thick ones that are either squares or spheres. Have you guys done any of this?
Yeah, the fancy cocktail Ice Cube.
If you're a hard liquor drinker, if you're a fancy scotch, bourbon kind of drinker, this is apparently what you're supposed to do because they melt slower.
That is true, but that cube just kind of feels like it's in the way for me.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather just go room temperature with it. Because making it cold also tamps down the overall flavor, too.
That's well played, Snob.
But there
that's well snobbly played on your part.
But there are different ice cubes for different occasions, though. Like when I'm drinking my hop water and gin concoction that I found this summer, mm-hmm. I like going with the chipped ice. You know, you have the different settings,
sure.
the cubed and the crushed. I like going with the crushed ice in that drink. But if I'm just doing like a regular iced tea or something, I like going with the cubes.
There you go. This really is brought to you by Ice Cubes. All right, fair enough. Isaiah, what do we got today?
All right, fellas. We got a new TikTok challenge that has hit the scene with the youth.
Here we go.
Yep, we had the milk crate challenge. We had the cinnamon challenge. And now we got the scalp popping challenge. Have y'all heard of this?
Scalp popping?
Scalp.
Like my head? Like
yeah.
scalp?
Like my head, yes.
Okay.
Wow,
okay.
All right. All this does not sound safe.
Wow. So, okay. Really, you... Obviously, men could do it, but men don't have longer hair usually. So you see a lot of women or girls doing this type of challenge where they get a lock of their hair, mm-hmm. kind of wring it around, and pull it so tight that it makes a popping sound.
What do you mean pull it? Pull it out of their head?
Yes, like pull it out of their head to where it makes a popping sound.
So wait a minute. Is this like the combo of, what do they call that thing where you get real, real quiet and you get into all the little sounds of, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. What's that called?
EDBM or JV. You know what I'm talking? It's got four letters, I think, where you're, and you scratch the thing and you mm-hmm. click and whatever. That is that what this is, but with pulling my hair out where I can hear it? What the heck is going on?
I don't think so. I think this is just a new way that teenagers could go viral.
But does it really make it makes a loud enough noise you can hear
it? That's audible?
Yeah. Yeah. If you look it up, you can see different girls and different people pulling their hair and making this popping sound.
Is there a visual element to this also? Like, can you see the hair kind of pop up when the sound occurs?
I haven't seen any where the camera is right on the scalp, but Dr. Andrew Doyle said,
here we go.
If you pull too hard or the wrong way, you risk tearing the tissue, tearing the skin, and pulling out a lot of hair, obviously.
We did have Larry from the Three Stooges birthday not that long ago. That was he was the master of this. He was the first scalp popper, now that I think about it. Because you know some of that was real. They didn't fake all that. Larry ripped some of his own hair out. And there's a condition, right, where you can be, I mean, there are people that literally have a problem with, like, pulling their hair out.
Is there?
Yeah. Mm. I heard about it the other day. What was I reading about? Some famous person that along the line had a little thing about, had this condition, was diagnosed with the condition where they like to pull their own hair out.
I just don't understand certain conditions.
I got to double check now when I pick my kid up from school today. I'll just double check with her. Hey, you aren't pulling hairs out on
You aren't popping
social,
your scalp, are you?
You aren't doing scalp popping, are you?
I'm not going to lie. It's better than slapping the teacher, which that's TikTok
right.
challenge gone viral.
Slapping the teacher where?
In the face. I'm sure Chad got emails telling parents to please tell your kids to not do this to our staff.
Yeah, that was
a problem.
That was a thing for a little while. That was the TikTok challenge. You get on there, you get the video rolling, and then you'd walk up to your principal, teacher, or whatever, and just haul off and open hands, smack them.
No, that's much better of the two.
This was the thing. Better than the scalp thing?
Yes!
No, it's not.
There's at least some point to that versus popping your scalp.
You can't go.
I'm not saying that it's a good point.
No, please don't say that.
There's at least some understandable intent there versus popping your scalp.
Right, that you are trying to be defiant. And I get what you're saying. Yeah. There's at least a line of thought you could follow.
Look, you're acting like every principal and every teacher are above a good slapping. We all had those teachers at the very least, and some of us had principals that did deserve a smacking. Now, don't do it, kids, if you're listening right now.
No.
Although, let's be honest, if you are listening right now just before 2 o'clock during the week, you are probably well on your way to slapping a teacher and or principal at some point in what remains of your school career.
That is terrible. You need to do that the healthy way. You need to put the teacher in question in a dunking booth, let the kids throw and raise some money for, like, the school. That's what you need to do.
How about the pie toss? Let's find a happy medium.
Ooh,
here.
That could be good. Back to the Three Stooges. When the pie stacked up. That's the episode I want to watch. Yes, pie fight. That's what you... Why can't we get that going on TikTok? Bring three pies to school made of nothing but whipped cream and go after it in history class. Can we do that?
Mm.
The three pie challenge.
If we can switch it from whipped cream pies to hot apple pies, then I'm in.
You can't go throwing scalding apple pies.
I'm not saying scalding. I'm just saying, like, warm. It's been out of the oven for like 15
right.
to 20 minutes.
I went too far. You're over there like, who said scalding? I didn't say scalding.
It should be good enough temperature-wise to eat. Because if it's not going to burn your mouth, it's not going to burn the skin on your face, right?
Oh, my God. So, Isaiah, did the milk crate thing just die down? What happened with that? Like, what happens with these things once they crest? It's just over?
Once the Dallas girl died, I think it kind of fizzled.
Did you say died?
Yeah.
How do you die doing the milk crate challenge?
Yo, we got some clumsy people in this world.
She fell on her neck? Is that what it was?
Yeah, bad fall.
Dude, the best one I saw was in a big city. Probably, I think it was in the streets of New York. This dude is on the crates. He planned it out to where when he fell, and he did, he fell into like 13 people that were lined up on the other side, and they just caught him. Like a crowd surf, and you just set him down. He was good.
That's a better way to do it than trying to land proper straight on top of crates. Fall to the side and have the crowd help
you. That's the thing. That's what I would have done. Like, if I give me three rows deep of people I trust, yeah, I would do that.
I still think the milk crate challenge would be at the combine.
Can you imagine? Big dudes like Ezekiel Elliott, Shaq Lawson.
I like it.
Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady has to do the milk crate challenge.
Tom Brady would have been an undrafted rookie free agent had he had to do the milk crate challenge.
What would, I'm losing his name. Oh, Kamara. What would he have done with the milk crate challenge? Alvin Kamara would have done it on his hands or something.
Oh, he would have moonwalked it.
He would have like grabbed the top one and threw it off and still stayed balanced and walked on his hands all the way down.
Yeah.
That would have been,
awesome. Been impressive.
All right, kids, there you go. Scalp popping is what's out there. Parent, we're not talking to the kids. We're talking to the parents. Parents, aunts, uncles, double check with your kids. Make sure they are not scalp popping.
And any of you degenerate kids listening right now, maybe consider the scalp pop. Perhaps it'll help you gain more of a TikTok audience to where you can figure out a decent way to earn income since you're clearly going nowhere quickly in life.
Oh, my God. Well, I started as a scalp popper. How'd you make your millions, Ed? Well, started as a scalp popper.
There's so my 25th class reunion was a couple weeks ago in Dallas, and I didn't go because, I just don't go to any of those anymore, but also going to Texas OU the next week, just skipped out on it.
Sure.
Apparently, there is a girl that graduated with the Newman Smith class of 1996 who has a daughter now who's like a TikTok hip-hop star.
Nice.
She has like hundreds of thousands of views, over millions of impressions in the entirety of her TikTok career. She's like this 16 or 17 year old kid that's probably clearing $1 million a year.
There you go. All right, put that money away. Save it, kids. You'll save it for the day when scalp popping is not cool anymore. 2 o'clock hour coming up. You know what's always cool? Badass movies are always cool, and we've got one to tell you about called Hard Luck Love Song. The director and a producer are going to be in the studio talking to us about it. We'll tell you how you can go see it and hear Trey do a Q&A about the movie with actors and producers and directors afterwards. That is all coming up. And at 2:30, we'll tell you why October 14th matters to us, including the birthdays of a couple of my favorite people in the world. That's coming up on The Horn.